drives me nuts because I keep getting these comments about people like, oh, Kevin's flip-flopping or whatever. It's like, no, I'm not. Like, it's so annoying because, look, at some point, the inflation thing is going to go down. It's just when? That's the question. And so it's not a flip-flop. It's just taking longer. People in the comments got to chill out about the flip. What?
In fairness, you did flip. I mean, you told me that you were planning to sell.
Yeah. Look, the thesis is the same. Inflation's going to come down at some point. It's just going to be a little bit flatter. Oh, we're live. Hey, everyone. Welcome to Millennial Money. Today, we're going to talk about the debt ceiling. We're going to talk about inflation, Biden and his infrastructure plan, Facebook. We'll talk about stocks. We'll talk about selling. We'll also talk about crypto and real estate. Didn't know we were live there. But most importantly, we do have a sponsor to talk about, and that's Andre.
We are sponsor. Yes, today our sponsor is Motley Fool. They actually reached out to us and they asked us our top five stocks. So we submitted ours. I submitted mine this week and their experts gave their opinions and thoughts and their analyses on my picks. And amongst ourselves, we kind of have a contest about which stock is going to do better. I think mine is going to win, but I don't know. Kevin is here and he's a big risk taker. I just think Kevin needs to go Super Saiyan right now.
Whatever stocks are on Andre's list, you just need to dump and sell.
I think it would be hilarious if Andre won the competition. I think that would be absolutely hilarious.
It'd be awesome.
And the only way to win it is take Andre's list that you could get down below in the description and then short it.
Yes. Run.
Which would be hilarious because I guarantee you at least one of those stocks we all own.
Hence the title, Selling.
Exactly. Deleting Facebook.
Oh my gosh. All right, folks. That. So let's get it. So check out that link down below for Andre's top five stocks that he's investing in as part of the competition. But let's talk, folks. Why don't we get started with the debt ceiling and then we'll go through like inflation, Biden's thing, Facebook, and then hit some stocks. How do you guys feel about that? You want to start with the debt ceiling?
No,
let's talk about the debt ceiling. This is coming up, Kevin. What is it? October 18th, and then
October
18th,
the X date. Graham, how do you feel about it? Are we going to be in default for the first time ever? Is this going to be what kicks Biden out of office? Because people, you know, he's the first one that would have let us default if it happens.
You know what? You know what would be funny? I have a feeling we're going to get very, very, very close. Because I remember. So for those who don't know, we have a debt ceiling. Basically, it's the U.S. is only able to borrow so much money. And right now we've already hit that amount. So I think it was like $28 trillion. That was the previous ceiling. We hit that back in, I think, July. And so since then, we've been taking these extraordinary measures. So basically, we're cutting back on a few things. We're trying to scrimp and save money to get us through. But that's only going so far until October 18th, where we're going to be out of money. And so at that point, we risk defaulting on the debts. And if that happens, the USA basically has a credit rating. Like people have credit ratings. The US has what's called the AAA credit rating, which means it's never defaulted ever in the history. And so the risk is that, well, if it defaults just once, then that's forever going to stay on its record. Then forever, the USA is going to be a country that defaulted before at some point on its debts. That's not a good look. In 2011, they got very, very, very close, and the S&P actually downgraded them to a AAA+. You have a AAA, and you have a AAA+. And just that little downgrade by the S&P caused the stock market to drop. I think it was like 7% in a single day when that came out. Everyone panicked. So there is a risk. I think we're going to get extremely close. What worries me is the fact that they allow it to get this close. The fact that it's even a discussion that's 2 weeks away. Less than 2 weeks away, actually. It's going to be like 10 days. The fact that we're 10 days away and it's still up for discussion is scary. I mean, it's bad. They need the Dave Ramsey method, you know? They really got to get on the baby step three of just, like, paying down this debt.
Yeah, and then we'd be Japan. Our economy would be shrinking, and people would be leaving the country.
That's true. All right, so does this affect our interest rate, right? So if we default and we go to BBB or whatever we might get, that affects the U.S.'s ability to borrow money, right?
Yeah. It just means, so investors love investing in the United States, and they'll get a low interest rate because they know it's safe. They put $100 in, it's pretty much guaranteed they're going to get their $100 out. There's no risk there. So now that there's a little bit of risk on the table, the USA has to pay a little bit more interest, which means borrowing money is more expensive. Be like you getting a mortgage instead of getting a 2.8%. Now the lender's like, well, you missed a payment over here. So now 3.3. That's the best that we could do. So now it just gets more expensive.
Give you $350.
That'll be $350. And they're like, damn it, Loch Ness Monster. I knew it.
In the meantime,
coin.
Or mint the $1 trillion coin. Yeah, Andre's got a great video on that. But in the meantime, what is so wonderful about drama like this in Congress, and I want to hear all your opinions on this, is it creates some beautiful uncertainty in the stock market, which I feel like we last had a really good bout of uncertainty in the S&P 500 last September. Interesting how it's almost basically the same month. It just was about 2 or 3 weeks later than last year. And then we saw that uncertainty again right before the election, like come mid-October, a lot of uncertainty right before the election. Is it going to be a contested election? What's going to happen? And people sell on this kind of stuff. And so in my opinion, it's a wonderful buying opportunity because the uncertainty is oftentimes just the fear is worse than the actual result. But I want to hear, have you guys been buying this week since the last Millennial Money? We've had quite a few red days. Wednesday, Thursday, and Monday were pretty red days. Did y'all buy?
Yeah. Kevin, first off, you make a great point. Yeah, buy Tattooed Chef stock. I agree with you 100%. That's what I heard, but I'm not 100%
sure. It's just down so much. How could you not? It's like buy it out of pity.
Oh, man. But anyways, it is a great point, though. It shakes up the market. And then the thing I've been thinking about is with the market recently, how much is it really the debt ceiling stuff? Because let's be honest, this comes up every few years and I feel like everybody's kind of looking past it. I wonder how much is the Evergrande situation. You know, I go on CNBC very, very late last night, maybe midnight, 1 a.m. They got a news story about Evergrande and they didn't, you know, make a payment. And, you know, I wonder how much is really that versus the debt ceiling stuff. But there's no doubt, as of yesterday at least, the big tech was off about 7.5% from their highs. So it's not a huge number. And I know, Andre, compared to Bitcoin, that's like you wouldn't even notice it. But you know, for the stock market, it starts to shake up a little bit. NASDAQ was, as of yesterday, NASDAQ was down over 1,000 points from its high about a month ago. So I've been doing a little bit of buying. A Corsair, that stock just gets killed. It doesn't matter if the market goes up, down, or doesn't do a thing. It's just downtrends. So I've been buying a little bit of that one. I still feel like small caps are a rocket ship waiting to pop, but we just don't know when that pop's going to happen.
Which ones?
Well, I feel like Corsair is one. I feel like Honest is another one. Smile Direct Club, I would put in that category, which that one went up huge today. I think it was up like 15%. And there's probably a few others that they just seem like they're you know, just have gotten destroyed, and it just seems like they're way overreaching to the downside, and it just seems like it's a matter of time before, you know, that switch happens. And we know when that switch happens, man, it happens fast, and you get moving the other direction pretty dang quickly. So, but what about you, Andre? You making any moves out there?
No, so last week I did. I bought Ethereum, but I think the market's going to feel a little bit more pain. I think we haven't hit max pain just yet. And I think we'll feel it in a week or so. But what do you guys think? Do you guys think it's going to take a few days? I mean, I'm looking at
for
Win
crypto?
Right now. No. I'm talking about stocks.
I like what Jeremy said, because I agree. I think sophisticated investors over and over again, they hear congressional drama and it's really just become an eye roller. It's like, really? Okay, we know it's going to be an 11th hour deal. Like, we've been down this road before. And we also already anticipate that Janet Yellen is saying the 18th, this is the deadline, when we know it probably can get, you know, pushed over to like the 19th or the 20th. Like, is it really going to come down to that date, right? She'll say that to try to get the fire. But come on, like, negotiation 101, right? You know, give your best offer, right? But the problem is, and I noticed this, I wrote it down. I noticed it on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. It was so weird last week. The S&P 500 fell substantially into the close on each of those days to where it was almost lower than at any other point throughout the day, the trading day. And I personally think that's because you have retail people who maybe are newer to the stock market, maybe have been investing in the indices and haven't felt a 7% correction yet. And all of a sudden, they're paper handing. They're selling out of their funds. They're calling their hedge fund going, that's it. This is it. I need my money. No, I don't want to hear you, Rush. I just need my money out, right? So they're pulling their money out. And even though the institutions are like, hey, this is stupid. Don't take your money out. The people are like, I want my money. And so ultimately they have to oblige. Then they have to sell. You know, Kathy can't get on the phone with people, probably thankful for that. Can't get on the phone with people and tell them not to sell. So they sell. And you see outflows like crazy at the funds. And then so you get all the clickbait articles like, Kathy's selling Tesla. Well, no, duh. That's what happens when people sell out of your fund. You have to sell the underlying securities, but whatever. And personally, I wonder how much of it is really just retailers paper handing who are invested in funds.
That's why I think within the next 2 weeks, we're going to still continue to see more fear mongering. And if we don't meet the deadline, and what is it, 2 weeks, right? 2 weeks we have about? Yeah. So at that point, we could extend it another, I don't know, week. Maybe we do go into a shutdown. If that happens, then guess what? Things go red even more. So, I mean, if that happens, then I'm definitely buying the dip. But as of right now, I'm just kind of steadily buying. I'm not changing my strategy. But crypto last week was definitely painful. So that's, I don't think it's as painful. It's definitely recovered since. So,
yeah, I don't know. Well, I've been buying a lot. All of these dips, I have to say. I mean, when it drops, I don't know. I've been putting more money in the market lately over this last week. But during the days like this where it's up, you still look overall and we're only back to where we were like a few months ago. So yeah. In terms of how big of a drop this is, I mean, this is pretty small in the big picture. And very well, I mean, I don't know. I think it could very well continue to fall as it could continue to go up. But I think along the way, we'll probably just bounce back and forth. Like we dip down, everyone buys in, goes back up, then it's going to dip again. Everyone buys in again. Seems like there's a lot of money on the sidelines.
Andre, why did Bitcoin come back so strong? I think we're over 50K. Any reason or just people buying it up?
Sorry, did you freeze for me or is that me being frozen?
That was you.
Yeah.
That was pretty loud and clear.
You're freezing, Andre.
All right. I think I heard the question. Why is Bitcoin going up? Is that the question? All right. So, only one reason that I've seen so far, and that's the U.S. bank, right, which is considered the fifth largest bank. So they're opening up custody services, which is just a fancy word for saying they're allowing institutional hedge funds, not retail people like us, to go in there and hold their Bitcoin directly. Because as of right now, they're buying what? Grayscale Trust. They're investing through that. This way, they would be able to buy Bitcoin directly. And if they don't want to custody or just hold it themselves, if they would rather trust a big bank, then those billion-dollar hedge funds could just be like, here, US bank, hold my coins. But the reason the market's becoming so bullish is because the sentiment is that eventually this will trickle down to the retail investor, right? And then eventually we would be able to go to a bank and say, hey, I have these Bitcoins, US bank, can you hold them for me? So that's the implication. That's why people are excited. And my thinking is, can you imagine the day that Elon Musk's initiative, the green energy miner movement gets started? That would be crazy because then hedge funds could start to buy Bitcoin directly because it's compliant, right? It's energy compliant. And can you imagine the billion, I don't even know how much offshore money we have, but like certainly billions and billions of dollars that are just sitting there in the Cayman Islands or wherever it is, that they could just like put it into Bitcoin. Because as of right now, it's just sitting there losing value to inflation. Can you imagine the moment that it's like, oh, here, you could just deposit the money with us. I mean, I feel like some of them would be encouraged to deposit that money in there. And yeah, who knows?
That makes sense. What do you feel is the next big catalyst for Bitcoin, Andre?
The ETF, 100%.
ETF.
Yeah,
100%. That's the next big one. Okay. Do you think that's like, are we talking like that's a massive step forward for Bitcoin? Like,
personally, I think a public ETF would skyrocket Bitcoin to 100K in one day. That's how bullish I am. One day.
Whoa. Yeah. How do you feel about that, Kevin?
Wow. That assumes that there's going to be this insane new demand that an ETF creates quickly within a day. I don't know. I see the optimism around an ETF a lot. I think it's wonderful. You know, ARK's trying to do it. Most of the institutions are trying to do it. I think there are dozens of ETFs pending application review with the SEC. SEC just punts on them all the time. I think in my opinion, 2022 is going to be the year of crypto. In my opinion, we're going to get the ETF. We're going to get so much. We're going to get clear regulation, which I actually welcome. I think there are going to be so many catalysts. But boy, to 100K, I mean, I guess it depends where we are before. If let's say tomorrow the ETF came out, do you think a double, Andre? Why? Do you just think so much more money is going to go, that's it? This is like the SEC has blessed it now? Or maybe tell me that.
It's not even the fundamental aspect of it. It's the speculative fervor that's going to happen within crypto. It's just the news of that.
Okay.
People are just going to pile in so much money and like, oh, this was the catalyst I needed. And who knows? They're going to sell their stocks, sell their houses, sell their kidneys to go into Bitcoin. It's just okay. It's the speculativeness of it that will drive it there. Now, is it going to last at 100K for you know a prolonged period of time? I don't know. But I could see it at least flash up to that point and stay there for who knows how long. And then maybe it'll come back down. I'm not saying it's going to stay there indefinitely for a long time. Yeah.
Okay. So you think you could actually get a momentum movement after an ETF gets approved, let's say. And would you then sell at a potential peak?
That's a great question. I personally wouldn't because I'm the worst at timing things. But I don't know. I'm not good at timing things. So I just stay in the markets regardless. And I don't care. I think we'll be at 100,000 for a prolonged period of time. You know, we're not there yet, but give it a year or two. And I think we'll be there. We're not going to go below 50K in the next cycle.
Now, do you think it's possible that crypto is coming back at the moment? Because we're seeing these inflation concerns kind of come back again, right? June and July, there was a lot of talk about, okay, we've peaked on inflation and we started kind of seeing a little bit of an inflection. Now we're getting those fears again, that crap, supply chain shortages getting worse, they're lasting longer. Basically, everything's bigger and lasting longer than expected. Every girl's dream. and the question is, is it possible that when this eventually rotates down in terms of inflation, when we eventually get here, this is a screenshot from Bloomberg, whenever this actually happens, whether that's in 2 years from now, 6 months from now, whatever, is it possible, in your opinion, Andre, that and I want to hear from you, Graham, and Jeremy, too, is it possible that we maybe run up now on inflationary fears? You know, maybe we get crypto 50, crypto 70K, but then we go over here and we're back down to, I don't know, 20 or something like that. Is that possible?
Gosh. Yeah, no, it is possible. I feel like, I don't know about you guys, but I'm seeing more and more memes around the internet of Jerome Powell. And it's like, inflation is transitory. And it's like stuffing down your mouth. And I don't know if people believe that message. And if we get to that point in that curve that you're showing me at 5%, 5.5%, even if it's short lived, the fact that we will get to that point, if we do, I think that's going to be such a huge catalyst for people to throw in a ton of money into Bitcoin.
So two things then, Kevin, on this chart here, we're at kind of peak inflation right now. You think then, based on that, that this would be a great time to pile into tech?
Yes.
Okay. And in phase.
And stock smashed by the supply crisis. So I did this this little list. I'll just read them off really quick. So supply stocks, I threw down some things that have just recently been getting beat up a little bit more. Disney, Mattel, Enphase, Shift, Sherwin-Williams, Under Armour, Nike, and Hasbro. These are just examples. I haven't done like big deep dive fundamentals on all of these. I just look at these as like, these are companies that have fundamentally gotten smashed because of not just supply shortages, chip shortages, tech shortages, car shortages, human shortages, mostly with Disney being the human one, the factory shutdowns with Nike, shipping delays, right? So higher valuation, tech, and then potentially the ones that are getting crushed by the supply shortage. Both of those, in my opinion, are things that, you're going to be buying into pain on. The question, though, is how long does that pain last, right? People are always like, oh, you don't want to catch a falling knife, right?
One of those stocks you mentioned, by the way, Kevin, is a stock that I picked in my top five. If you want to know what they are, link down below.
Wow.
I do agree with you. Yeah. I do agree with you with one specifically for sure.
Ooh.
Now I have to look. Because I don't know what the list.
Now, Kevin, are you saying kind of anything tech related, or are you referring to big tech, or just want to clarify that there?
Ah, Andre, I found it. Yeah, folks, you're going to have to go to, I'm going to answer you there. One sec, Jeremy. But Andre, yeah, that's interesting, folks. You're going to have to go to fool.com/Andre to see what that one is. I like that one, Andre. That's a good, wasn't on my list, but I like that one. Dang it, I can't short that one. That's a good one.
By the way, speaking of Bitcoin, by the way, because you were talking about this, I sent you a link. I'd love for you to put it up. We've talked about this before. And Andre, I know you've covered this. The stock to flow model of Bitcoin.
Sorry. I'm going to pull that up. So rude.
I'm going to quickly answer Jeremy.
Thank you, Kevin.
You're asking like what kind of tech, like small cap, mid cap, large cap, or like sec, like.
Yeah. Are you just saying buy everything tech, or is it just big tech, or is it just specific sec? You know, categories inside tech.
It's a little bit of everything. So I have InsurTech, so like Lemonade or Hippo, right? Then there's fintech, right? We know these, the SoFis, the whatevers. Then there's the consumer discretionaries like Etsy, revolutionary, right? Affirm, in my opinion. Then, of course, you've got like the energy tech. So those are the kinds of ones I want. And I try to spread out amongst those different techs. And then in addition to like Fang, right? But I try to spread out amongst those. Sometimes people are like, oh, Kevin, why insurance? And it's like, well, I mean, like, I'd like to also have some innovative aspect to my portfolio there, right? Not that I necessarily love insurance.
quick question, by the way, on that point before you finish. Is that now the diversity of sectors, would that technically be classified as a diversified sector pick, or would that all be sort of tech?
No. It's horribly not. Diversified. It's, yeah, no. But
purely
but see,
tech.
I would look at it as more as a purely growth. Which is bad because, you in inflationary times, you're eating dirt, right? You're eating poopy. But that's okay because I diversify my portfolio with real estate. So that way, if we have those inflationary times, my real estate's usually kicking butt. So, but not everybody's portfolio is like that. Anyway. Okay. So, Graham, sent a chart called a stock to flow model. Okay. Have at it, Graham.
Yeah. So, Andre, would you probably be able to help explain this better than me? But the stock to flow model, you could explain exactly how it works. But my understanding is so far, this has done a pretty good job extrapolating what the value of Bitcoin is going to be over time. And it puts the value of Bitcoin really by the end of the year at almost $80,000. And so far, it's maintained this trajectory. I don't know off the top of my head how it's calculated, but I'm sure you, Andre, would have a better idea.
Yeah, I made a video about this. I'm going to try to dig deep and see if I remember because it can get complicated. But basically, this line follows the issuance rate to demand. And so over time, as the issuance rate of Bitcoin goes down, so it gets cut in half every 4 years. And as the demand goes up, it's basically modeling that. Now, one thing this thing cannot take into account are things like, the Roni Rona, right? It can't predict that because these are human factors that we can't take into account. But so far, this chart has been right, I think, within 5% margin of error or 10% margin of error. And so far, yeah, it does put Bitcoin at around, $80,000 by the end of this year. Now it doesn't mean that it's going to indefinitely, like for sure, be at 80,000. It could be below that. It could be higher. As you can see, like we've had peaks above the line and we've had peaks below. So it really depends. It's going to depend on things like, the ETF, or it's going to depend on, negative regulations. Maybe we get that instead. We don't know, but all this is following is the supply rate. And as the supply rate gets cut in half and the demand goes up, that's just like a mathematical way of calculating that.
Yeah,
I remember there was a point, I think like 2 or 3 months ago, where if Bitcoin didn't reach a certain price, he was going to be wrong on his prediction. And I think in the last moment, he got like, what?
John McAfee?
No, it wasn't John McAfee. It was Plan B on Twitter.
Oh, right. What about him?
There was a point a few months ago where he was very close to having this be wrong. Or there's something about this. And I think it was like last minute and last like few days, the price of Bitcoin went up to the point where he could say that it was correct.
Right. And technically, yeah. I think the reason he said he was going to be quote unquote wrong is because it was going to dip below that 10%. I don't remember what it was, but it was below that threshold, which has never happened before because it's only been within a certain margin of error. And I think it was 10%. I could be wrong, though.
It was something like that. But I remember looking back at this after it had happened because nobody had talked about it.
Right.
And sure enough, he was correct.
Yes.
Very surprising. And I thought, awesome. Yeah.
I really like that you shared that. I love the stock to flow model. He's awesome.
Yeah. I was looking into this earlier when I just, because every morning I checked the price of Bitcoin. I checked it. I was like, wait, what? 50 now? What happened? It was just like 47 over the weekend. And so when I start looking into it, apparently a big push was Bank of America calling it too big not to be taken seriously. And it was them just saying that and really endorsing Bitcoin, getting behind it, that people are like, all right. Bank of America also made a really interesting point that they said more regulation long term could be good for Bitcoin because that means it's going to gain more acceptance the more it's regulated. And the more regulation kind of you put on it, the more question it takes off the table of like, is this going to be something that's banned?
Right. It's so funny to me to see like these institutions and hedge funds and banks be like, guys, no, Bitcoin, seriously, it's actually pretty cool. And we're like, okay, please tell me more. Yeah, tell me something I didn't know.
So what's also interesting to me, though, is I just saw this because this is a logarithmic scale chart, which means this number goes up exponentially, right? But there are a few things that make me curious. First of all, it does not appear like days halving matters much. I mean, there are a couple places here where you've got green above, you've got the dark blue down below. So maybe, but then you've got the green kind of breaking that trend over here. So who knows, right? I the colors I'm going to ignore. What I think is interesting, though, is that for some reason, this red line that's drawn, this mean or moving average or whatever, I want to know why they think it's going to be so much flatter here around this 84,000 to where basically they're saying Bitcoin could literally be flat for 2 years is what they're saying. They're saying no appreciation in Bitcoin for two freaking years, which basically means if this is going to hold true, you sell it as soon as this thing gets to $84,000. And then basically you want to get in once it starts running again. So you see it go from 85 to 100, you get in, you ride it to a mill, and then you GTFO again. But they don't show that same sort of flatness really here. You have more growth built into here. So I want to understand why that. But because I also want to know...
Hold on, let me jump in real quick before I forget. Because it's easier to move an asset with a smaller market cap than it is as it grows larger. So as it grows bigger, it's a lot harder to move over time.
Okay. So I could see that because the halvening is creating this run up, is what you're saying.
Right.
No, the problem that I have,
right,
which I don't love, is that this chart has technically only been right one time so far, from what I can understand, and that seems odd. Why would I say it's only been right one time so far? Well, because of this. Date created January 2019. So, I mean, I can look at any chart in the past and apply patterns over it. And then if I happen to be right one more time thereafter, which it's not even perfect, not that the other times have been, but you have to be right one time after, does that all of a sudden bestow this genius credibility on everything else? Because remember, January 2019 is somewhere over here, right here. Right.
So Kevin, quick, let me just jump in real quick. So the stock to flow model was not uniquely created for Bitcoin. It wasn't something this guy looked at the chart and just retroactively created this beautiful graph, right? The stock to flow model was applied to other assets like gold and silver and all this other stuff. And to a T, all of these assets that have a predictable issuance rate have that same trend where it follows the stock to flow model. So the stock to flow model was not uniquely created for Bitcoin. It could be retroactively applied to virtually any other predictable issued asset, and it would follow the line. Now,
we could see this in gold, is what you're saying.
Right, 100%, yes.
Okay, I guess we'll have to we'll table that and put some more research on. I find it interesting, but here's one of the things that kills me about trading. And so first of all, I like to be skeptical. Tend to be very skeptical. Oh, one of the things that kills me is there's like a library of charts or templates or things that I could apply. Oh, that pattern. Hold on. Page 13,752. Yes, and that's this pattern right here. Mm-hmm. Classic Gubabaga pattern. Whatever, right? It's like if you got the chart in the past, you can apply something to it. And so that just makes me skeptical. If you're saying the stock to flow has also worked with gold, maybe there's some interesting argument there.
I will say the only and I love being skeptical as well, and I can't stand chart patterns because they're just like human psychology is nothing more.
Yes.
That's all it is. But one thing that makes me skeptical about that graph is that if you apply it to any other crypto, virtually any other crypto in the market, it does not apply. It falls apart. So there has to be some level where it crosses over, and I don't know what that X factor is, but once it becomes that thing, then it can be applied. But for example, if you apply this to another crypto, like I don't know, Cardano or something else, it would not have that same path, interestingly. And so it does not apply to every asset whose issuance rate we can predict. That's the thing I don't understand why that is. And what is that X factor? I don't know. All I know is that it does apply to certain metals, and it does apply to Bitcoin. I don't know why. That's a great question.
Jeremy, Graham?
I don't know. I see your point, Kevin. That's definitely, I think, something to take into consideration. So I believe in that. I don't know where it's going to go from here. I have no idea why it just works with Bitcoin, why it doesn't work with, you know, other coins. Let's see. What did you just pull up here?
It's the same thing. It's just just looking at the scatter plot zoomed in, basically. It's sort of the variance that you get above and below the line that they've kind of drawn here. But again, I'm skeptical going backwards, just because if the chart was created in 19, and I'm also wondering what's very interesting. Okay, here's a question. This red line, does this red line update as the price movements happen? So does this chart change every day as the price changes?
No, it doesn't.
Okay. Because it does say stock flow 365 day average. So to me, that sounds like a moving average. So at some point, if this is a moving average, this should honestly be a dotted line, because this is a prediction over here. And this is taking the actual moving average, isn't it?
Yeah, no, I'm looking into it. I'm trying to see if it applies for gold.
Okay. I think we have videos to make about this.
take a screenshot and track it over time and see if it moves.
Well, no, I've been aware of this stock to flow model, and that chart has just always looked the same. Now, admittedly, I haven't like looked at the numbers. All I see is just the picture of the line graph, and it's never changed in the last few years that I've seen it. But, you know, that's definitely something good to be skeptical about. I don't think it updates, because if it did, social media would just have a field day with it and be like, oh, this graph is it's constantly changing.
And social media will admit it's wrong?
Yes, it will gladly point out who is wrong.
That, I like that. That's a good point. Very well. Very well said. Okay. So the next thing that do we have anything? Do we want to talk about Shiba Inu here? Elon Musk pump of the dog coin, or are we staying away from dog coins?
Everyone's talking about that. Okay. Do you know anything about it, Kevin?
I know that it's based on Ethereum and a dog and a dream. Here's what I would love to hear from Andre. Is Andre, please, if you can, help us understand what this burning of coins, okay, to call something different. Like with Shiba, I was looking into this, and they're like, oh, well, we have a quadrillion coins that we issued, but we burned half of them. So therefore, it's deflationary. I'm like, no, it's not. Just because some jerk, whatever, maybe he's a nice guy, I don't know, because some nice guy, I'll just say it that way, decided to burn half, you know, half of the existing supply, doesn't make it deflationary. That just means somebody burned half the supply.
Right. Sorry, was I supposed to comment on that? I'm not sure.
Yeah, I guess the question is, what would make a coin deflationary? Because like with Ethereum, for example, coins get sent off to a wallet that nobody has access to. But who created this wallet? Does that person have access to where coins go to die, basically? Any thoughts on the burning or making cryptos deflationary?
Dude, this is so complicated. I don't keep up with every coin. So I have no idea how the mechanics of the burning work, because you have two sides to the equation. There's the burning, but there's also the issuance rate, right? So I don't know the issuance rate, how that compares. Does it have utility beyond that in, you know, in other applications? Right. I have no idea. I don't know.
So what I'm hearing you're saying is all in on the sheep.
Exactly. 100%. YOLO all of it.
Because there was somebody here in this chat that said they are really, really excited that SHIB is doing so well because they have 13 million coins in SHIB. And I'm like, 13 million? That sounds like a lot. So I took 13 million and multiplied it by the USD equivalent. And folks, they have $234 in Shiba Inu, and they want you to know that they're adding.
Yeah, out of quadrillion, which probably is like what 0.00001% or something.
I thought for a second you were gonna be like 20 grand, then I'd be like, all right, 20 grand, yeah. 200, yeah. And they have $7.
Okay. Are any of you in SHIB, or are we moving off this one?
I'm super heavy in it. I've been getting the crypto game so heavy lately. It's just pretty much all my days consumed with is just looking at the U.S. debt chart and buying cryptos. That's pretty much all I do now. By the way, have you guys ever heard of the U.S. debt clock?
Oh, no.
Here we go again.
Nope. We're not doing this again.
Yeah. Okay. You never heard of that.
Have you ever heard
of Facebook?
Wait, hold on. Before we get that, can we talk about why Elon pumped that? I thought he was like a super Dogecoin supporter.
You know what's crazy is he didn't even really pump the coin. He just put a picture of a Shiba dog on his Twitter.
Okay.
But that was a signal. Folks, that was a signal. He's clearly all in the Shiba Inu.
Oh, wait. What? I thought it was clearly Shiba Inu. Isn't that Dogecoin? Because that's the Shiba, or is the Shiba Inu a completely different dog breed? I don't know.
No. The Dogecoin is the Shiba, like the icon is a Shiba Inu, but then they made a coin called Shiba Inu.
Oh, I see. Got it.
So Dogecoin is like based on Bitcoin, and Shiba Inu is based on Ethereum. And I guess Elon's dog is named Floki or whatever. So now the Floki coins are taking off. This is like, I don't get it. I mean, I see it. I can observe. But I don't get it.
When the market falls and collapses, we're going to be talking on Millennial Money like, wow, this was the pivot point. This was the inflection that we didn't see coming.
Yeah. This is what led crypto to go to zero.
No, you know what? It's funny because we can't reasonably criticize these projects, because anything you criticize about that, you could literally take and apply to anything else in crypto, whether it's Bitcoin or Ethereum or anything else. So you just sound like an old bitter guy who's just like too late, who didn't buy enough. And it's impossible. And so I don't know.
And speaking of which too, I just checked this since crypto's up. CryptoPunks are now up $100,000 from when I first mentioned them here.
Wow.
A month and a half ago. Yeah. The new floor is $419,000.
Wow. But people, are they actually buying that, or is that just like the sale prices? I'm sorry.
That's now the base as far as what the cheapest one is listed for sale.
Yeah, but are they actually? See, here's my problem. And this is the same problem that happens in Pokemon. It's like people will look at the last sale price. And this is why I like real estate, because it's more sensible in that way. You don't look at the last sale price. You look at the average over a long period of time. and in Pokemon, and it's seemingly in crypto as well, that like they see the last sold thing and they're like, well, clearly mine is worth that much too then. And it's like, okay, good luck finding that rich guy that's going to buy your stuff for 400 grand, like your random NFT that there's like thousands of. That's my only issue, is like, if this was a baseline over a long period of time, like, yeah, then it's worth that much. But a last sale is, doesn't make any sense to me.
You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
Yeah, to me, these are less stable than Evergrande. Like, it's all good while the going's hot. You know, you're getting your 12% dividend or whatever. You know, your value of your Cyberpunk or whatever is going up. When stuff hits the fan, you're liquidating this stuff for pennies on the dollar.
I'm just saying, there were two recent sales. Just as of a few days ago, one for $1.5 million and then one for $993,000.
But okay, let's analyze this. Who bought them? And is the person who bought them somehow going to be able to benefit from success in the NFT business? Like when Visa buys a Cyberpunk or Funk or whatever it is, they're trying to win NFT business for processing, right? It's marketing. You know, when people buy these multi-million dollar things from Sotheby's, and then you find out these buyers are associated with some sort of NFT business, it's an eye roller to me. It's nothing more than blatant collusion to manipulate these prices, is what it sounds like to me.
Right. And that's what I was going to say. Like, there's also the other issue is like, is it just an insider buying it just to pump up his own bag? Like, I don't know. Where's the research on that? I have no idea.
See, where's that Zillow TikTok loser? This is the stuff we should be talking about.
Kevin, be nice.
You know what's funny? I saw his response. He did a response on TikTok and he's like, I never said that was going to happen. I said, what if that happens? Hypothetically, what if? I never said that was going on. I just said, what if they were able to do that? And everyone just took that too literally.
Well, no, I believe him. That was a very smart strategy on his behalf. Well, like, why not say something that's non-committed like that and just get a lot of
bad? I think that would make him look bad in his real estate business. I think he's he's attracting those people aren't buying houses.
The average person does not care to look beyond that research.
Yeah,
they don't watch that video.
If he's doing this for attention, he's drawing attention to his real estate business, and I think those are not his clients. The people who believe that are not out buying houses. They're doing the opposite of that. They're following on TikTok, and that's it.
I could totally see people be like, wow, you're so smart. You exposed the truth. Show me the great deals now. Like, that makes sense. Why not? They're not looking at our videos explaining, no, wait, let me show you a 15-minute long video that disputes this minute long thing you already believe.
Listen, if I were Keller Williams and I got a hold of that and he worked for my company, I would send him down. You have to train him for a whole weekend and just educate him on the real estate business. Start over from scratch.
I would give him
relearn the whole business.
I would give him a promotion and say, make 10 more like that.
I think it's a terrible image for Keller, whatever brokerage he's with. I don't think it's a good image at all that he's spreading misinformation. Speaking of spreading misinformation, maybe that's a great segue to Facebook.
Really quick, before we transition, I want to just mention, I looked up the wallet for this the last cyber purchase or whatever that you signed.
CryptoPunk, yeah.
The last PNG file that sold for $1.53 million. JPEG, even worse, it degrades. The last JPEG that sold for $1.53 million, I would like to just mention that when I look at their wallet, this is an account that literally on August 9th had $150 million worth of volume. I'm sorry, between August 9th and 15th. These people, whoever they are literally constantly doing transactions. Look at this, $2.2 million wow. 5 hours ago, 200 grand, 700 grand, 1.3, 2.1, 6.4. This is not some homeboy at home going, I'm hanging up my Cyberpunk. This is an institutional trader or somebody in the business that knows this is bull crap and they're making money off it.
Bro, it's Elon.
Exposed.
How would they make money on something like that? It seems
trading
like
trading it. It's just trading. It's they're gonna hold it for 2 or 3 months and then probably dump it. They're crypto trader. It's got to be somebody with lots of money. You know,
how is that any different from Kevin? What you're doing though, buying a stock and then selling it a few months later
if
it's a price target.
It's no. Well, okay. So there are two things here. If you're buying like Enphase because you're like, this is fundamental value, I want to hold this for the next 10 years, that's one thing. If I'm going to go buy some meme stock like Metamaterial or Newegg or whatever, Camber Energy, and I'm going to ride the wave, I don't care. It has no fundamental value. It's a worthless company. It may as well be bankrupt. But I'm going to ride the wave, make money off of it, and dump it. That's fine. But what happens is that gets disconnected. Like what's actually happening gets disconnected in our conversation when we're just talking about how, oh my gosh, the floor, and this is no offense, I'm just saying, the floor of these cyberpunks is now $490,000 or whatever, makes it seem like these have value when in reality, they're just speculators' toys.
You were talking about Bitcoin, right?
The NFTs.
Oh, whoops.
The cyber. Wait,
quiet, everyone. Grandpa's talking.
Get off my lawn.
Kevin, hold on. But against your point, hold on. Stocks are most of them are affordable for most people, right? So if these NFTs are worth hundreds of thousands of dollars, like who's buying these? Like what is being manipulated? Like who is this trying to appeal to? The hedge fund? Like they're trying to trick them? Like I don't.
No, I think nobody's buying this crap caring about who's going to buy it in the future. They just care that somebody's going to buy it. I guarantee you there are plenty of billionaires or 100 millionaires that sit around and they just gamble on this stuff because it's fun and they can make money on it or whatever. And hey, it works as long as it's going up. But this bestows a message, in my opinion, to the 99% basically who don't have these whale accounts, that these NFTs actually have value, when in my opinion they don't. That there's no value. They're trading and speculation tools. The next time there's actually a liquidity crisis, which is totally, keep in mind, the opposite of what we have had since March of 2020. We have been in the opposite of a liquidity crisis. We've been drowning in money. Once we actually get to a real liquidity crisis again, mark my words, these are all worth zero.
But Kevin, can you literally say that same thing about like virtually anything?
No, because see, like companies, like stocks, I think Jeremy will agree, they actually have PPE, plant property equipment. And that can include tangibles like machinery or human capital, processes and systems. That could include patents. That can include goodwill, which is like your brand value. This stupid JPEG has no brand value. Okay, maybe Cyberpunk.
But I think you're equating volatility to, you know, usefulness or uselessness.
No, I think Kevin has a point. With something like a CryptoPunk, you have to have a buyer for that specific item that you want, that JPEG that you want to sell. And if you don't have a buyer for the JPEG, then you're going to have to keep dropping the price until eventually someone's out there being like, all right, I'll buy it.
What about real estate? You could say that. I'm with you guys. I'm just trying to be a devil's advocate here. I'm with you. But I think you could say that about real estate, too.
Well, but real estate is tethered.
Right.
Two things. So, first of all, real estate is tethered to the fundamental basis of what can you really realistically rent this for. Sometimes it rubber bands a little above or below, but real estate can't go to the moon because people are trading it and plowing into it one day and then moving out of it because the selling costs are too high. It's highly local. It takes a lot of time to process a transaction. It's not a convenient trader's speculation toy. What is convenient to speculate on is something that I could trade within seconds, something I can get options on, something I could get easy debt against. Totally the opposite of real estate. This is why real estate very frequently, I mean, like a 30% drop in real estate is like once a decade kind of thing, right? A 30% drop in crypto is like an every 3 or 4 months kind of thing, right? And it's because, in my opinion, the ease of momentum to go in and out.
Yeah, all of this to say, I think what you're really saying when it boils down to it is just this stuff is a lot more speculative and you should just be prepared to lose a lot over a very short amount of time. Not necessarily that they're worth zero or they're going to zero, because I don't think that's necessarily true. You're just saying that.
Okay, I do agree. Imagine that if we have some massive liquidity crisis, these will have some form of residual value. Because quite frankly, even us here, if we see a Cyberpunk at $5,000 or $2,500, well, like at some point it's like so how could I not buy it at that price, right? It's basically zero, right? Even if it's just 10% of what it is now, 40 grand, it's basically zero compared to what it was, right?
No, okay, I think zero, five grand is a lot, especially if it has the potential to go up even higher, but useful, like zero implies it's just forever. It's done. It's never coming back, which I don't think.
Never comes. Okay. All right. Then maybe zero is not the right word. Okay. So I don't know. Any other thoughts from Graham, Jeremy, Andre on NFTs? Any other crypto coins you're looking at, or do we want to move
necessarily.
On?
I think we should probably move on to the Facebook. Since Jeremy's holding a lot of money in Facebook, aren't you, Jeremy? Ooh.
And he's selling all of it. You heard it here first.
I don't know about a lot of money, but I do have money in the FB. And it's treated me very well, but it's a controversial stock, and it will continue to be one. You know what's funny is this latest one, this came out about some studies that Facebook was doing around things, right? And my thing is, like, why is Facebook even spending time doing studies? Because no other companies do studies. You know what I mean? Like, you don't see Apple doing studies about iPhone addiction or something like that. Otherwise, I'm sure that stuff would come out, right? I never see anything about that. Like, why is, you know, have we ever seen a study around YouTube addiction? Like, no, we haven't, have we? It's kind of almost better to not do your little studies, because your little studies are going to come out and prove wrong, right? I mean, I can tell you, there's always going to be a certain percentage of folks that get addicted to something, right? And it is actually harmful to them in some manner, right? Gambling, alcohol, social media, movies, sports, you know, whatever it is, right? And it's just the way it is. And so, you know, Facebook's caught up in another thing, and they'll get past this, and then it'll be another thing. And a lot of folks are enemies of Facebook for many various reasons, and they seem to continue to pick up enemies. They're taking a lot of advertising dollars from a lot of mainstream media, so they're an easy punching bag. And you know, it's gonna continue to be that way for a long, long time.
But this could apply also, I think, in a way to YouTube. I know YouTube has definitely tried to crack down on what videos they recommend, but I could see this absolutely spilling over to YouTube and TikTok. In terms of the content that they recommend people,
yeah. I mean, the same exact studies, you know, they were doing around, like, well, there's a certain percentage of, like, girls that get body images, like body image issues. They were making an argument, right? Or, you know, people would feel bad because they saw certain people, like, you know, looked a certain way or had a certain amount of things, right? The same thing could be said on YouTube, right? Like, look at some of the biggest channels, like the family vloggers. Look at the lifestyle those people are living. I can almost guarantee you there's a certain segment of people that are addicted to those sorts of videos, and they watch those, you know, family vlog channels that they live in, like, these 10-bedroom mansions in, like, you know, Calabasas or whatever. And, you know, but you know, other folks just don't do those studies, right? So they don't come out. which is kind of a smart idea if you don't want to hurt your business. Because, like I said, there's always going to be a certain amount that gets hurt, right? I mean, you could say with us, I'm sure there's a certain amount of people that take stock market investing too far and do some super risky stuff that we wouldn't agree with, but you could pin it back on us and be like, well, I started watching from them and they sent me down that rabbit hole or crypto or anything, right? So I don't know, man. I just feel like you can make anything look bad if you want it to look bad.
The problem that I see is that a lot of their algorithms are based on both watch history and what you spend the most time looking at. So if you're engaging in a post that makes people upset, the algorithm is going to give you more posts like that, and you will get more upset. And I mean, at the end of the day, they are a business, so their goal is to keep you on the platform for as long as possible. But at what social cost is that if they're just feeding you the information that you just want to see more of, that keeps you on the website longer, versus giving you all other information that maybe causes you to be like, all right, that's enough Facebook for today, click.
So then we get into how much do we want to censor our society? You know, and how far we want to take it to China levels, you know, and it's like, you can't look at this. You've got to look at this. You know, if I enjoy looking at something or watching certain videos or seeing certain Instagram pages, like I want to see more of that. And you guys would, you know, I don't want to see some random crap that I don't want to see. Right. That's not, I don't want to watch some random YouTube videos. I want to watch certain YouTube channels. So it makes sense for these social networks or whatever you want to call them to show us what's relevant. Right. If I want to watch a Graham Stephan video and I watched it yesterday and I smashed the thumbs up for him, I want to watch it. His next one too. Don't go show me some other crap, right? And so then you get down the slippery slope of how far do you want to take it? How far do we want to censor people? And do we want to force certain individuals in front of people's face because we're like, that could be dangerous for you?
Yeah, I will say I agree a lot with what Jeremy says. For me, I'm conflicted because I don't know where to draw the line between what Jeremy's saying and the social responsibility that platforms like Facebook have, because I think arguably Facebook has more influence over the political sphere than YouTube does. Like, I think if you want to run a successful election or if you want to, I mean, Twitter is a huge one too. It's almost like it's a must thing now. Like, you have to have that presence. And if Facebook is monetized through spreading negativity and misinformation, because it's easier to convince someone of a lie than it is to convince them they've been lied to, then they get to make more money by spreading that misinformation because it gets that hatred. And it's like, we want to fight. And I think ultimately the social price that we pay is we don't trust each other anymore. We can't get our news sources from a singular place anymore. And I mean, does YouTube have that same impact? I don't know. I don't think that it does. I think Facebook has a far more reaching impact, but how do you quantify that impact? That's the hard part. It's like, how do you regulate that?
Well, in fairness, Facebook did that for us, and so that's what's so crazy about this. This isn't about a small percentage. These are the Facebook files. It was a big five-part series that they did in the Wall Street Journal, and it's the one that really got me, because I actually read this in print, was when you go to the actual article. Some of the things, and these are statistics coming from Facebook, not people like shorting Facebook stock, right? These are from Facebook. 32% of teen girls said that when they felt bad about their bodies, Instagram made them feel worse. Or you go down to among teens who reported suicidal thoughts, 13% of British users and 6% of American users traced their desire to kill themselves back to Instagram, right? These are deep statistics. Especially when more than 40% of Instagram users are under 22 years old, and people maybe don't know how to cope with mental health, because quite frankly, mental health care in America sucks. It's absolutely trash. And you can't expect people's parents who are 40, 50, 60 years old to be able to help their kids figure out, here's how to detach from the dopamine addiction of you constantly checking that little red notification icon, right? And then when you have an algorithm that's not actually showing you content that you subscribe to or like to, because remember, that's also not what YouTube does. YouTube doesn't show you content that you hit the like button on or subscribe to. It shows you stuff that gets you the most watch time on that kind of content based on the amount of times they show it to you. So they show you something and they're like, hey, we think you're going to watch this for 8 minutes. But not only do we think you're going to watch this for 8 minutes, We think you're going to share it with somebody else who's also going to watch it for 8 minutes, and they're going to share it. And so this one piece probably has a 24-minute value for every time we show it to you versus something else that might be informative, which you're going to read or like or watch and not share. Well, then Facebook's going to prioritize profits. They're going to give you more of what you're likely to share. And unfortunately, things that you're more likely to share tend to be divisive, tend to lead to more echo chambering in politics, and ultimately harm society, as Andre was saying. And so that's where the balance is. I don't think this is a matter of censoring.
So two things. One is, like, where are those studies being done at? You know what I mean? Like
Facebook.
Yeah. But it's like how are they doing that? Are they straight up asking, like, people, like, you know, these questions like that? That's where I'm quite interested. It's like, how do you just come out and ask somebody, like, are you suicidal, by the way? Do we make you have extra suicidal threats? Like, maybe because you're asking me these questions, maybe I am now. No, but I'm like, seriously, like, how do you get to that? That's some deep stuff.
To be fair, Jeremy, I think if anything, the questionable aspect is that the statistics that are shown for Facebook are probably lower than the reality, because they're probably looking at statistics retroactively, and they're like, well, this story that came out about this person who killed themselves referenced Facebook or Instagram or whatever. And they're like, well, let's put that into the number. But the numbers that are not reported, because like you said, it's not something we ask people. I think the actual numbers are way higher than what's actually in that report.
They have the actual, like, slides. They were polls that were done. So like, you could go in through the actual slides of the content. Like, for example, people would get asked surveys. In general, how has Instagram affected the way you feel about yourself or mental health? And then they give answers. Much worse, somewhat worse, no effect, somewhat better, much better. In fairness, there are people who feel a lot better using the platform and make those votes, right? So is there an argument to be made that maybe some of the things are being overblown? Maybe. But then it also does create cause for concern if individuals in certain areas or specifically girls are having more amplified body image problems or whatever problems because of their usage of a certain platform. Yeah. And then that's where the question is, where does Congress step in? Are they supposed to say, hey, Facebook, you're not supposed to be able to do what's profitable for you, even if that means people are dying? You know, that's the problem.
It seems almost like it's magnifying whatever thoughts people are already feeling in that sense, where it's like, if people are feeling good, they could go on Instagram and be inspired. And the people who are already not feeling as good, they'll go on Instagram and have those feelings of jealousy. So whatever they're feeling, maybe Instagram and Facebook just magnifies it. It just turns it up, whatever's already there. Yeah.
That makes
true, sense. But I think that YouTube handled the situation much better, because I don't know if you guys remember, a few years ago, the faces of YouTube were very different than they are today. Like, back then we had, I don't want to, like, name any names, but I'm sure you guys remember, like, Alex Jones. He was kind of like the face of YouTube's platform. He was very kind of divisive kind of a character. And so the fact that YouTube is just kind of lightening up the mood, I feel like Google is handling this a little bit better. Whereas Facebook's like, oh, hatred, like, misinformation, hell, if that gets you to spend more time on the platform.
You know what I think it is? With the difference, though, between the two, I feel like, is YouTube, it's very creator-oriented. It's easy to point to one person, be like, that person, they're doing bad, let's take them off the platform, let's demonetize them, versus Instagram, it's a lot more difficult to be like, all right, this person, they got 20 million followers, they're posting too many nice pictures, making their people feel bad, let's get rid of them. YouTube, I think, is more creator-focused, so it's easier for them to cherry-pick certain examples that maybe don't align with what YouTube stands for.
Right. That's true, too. That's true, too. It is easier for Google and YouTube to monitor that kind of stuff. That's true, too.
And it's interesting how everybody has a different experience, because, I mean, for me on Instagram, like, when I go on there, it's like I share memes with certain people that are close to me, and, like, we laugh about it and stuff like that. And, you know, all this dark stuff, I'm like, holy smokes, man, people must be on the dark hole that I don't know about on Instagram. Like, holy smokes. But, you know, to the body image issues and things like that, it's like, well, you know, you know, if you watch the Kardashians, are you going to have those same sort of feelings because you see them and they're, like, so perfect? But now, you know, you'd rather blame it on Instagram rather than you're watching the Kardashians, or is it different? You know, it gets really, you know.
And that's I see the blurriness that you're painting, and it becomes this question of, when you're watching Kim Kardashian, you know it's ridiculous, you know it's OTT, over the top, and most people know it's scripted, and if they don't think it's scripted, newsflash, it's scripted. The camera people are very expensive. They got to get their shots in on time. But now what's more of a potential issue is if you're a high schooler and you're 17 years old, you go to school, you see all your friends at school or whatever. Then you go home and you go through your feed. And if the only thing you're being showed are pictures of the beautiful people in your class and not the ugly people in your class, then does that make you feel like crap? You know, that's where it becomes a problem. And so that's where people make the argument. Should children, especially girls under 18, be shown posts from their friends and their peers in a chronological manner rather than an algorithmic manner? Because chronological means you got to scroll through it and you see everything. Yeah. You know, algorithm means it's the algorithm just showing you either the you drama or the sexy stuff.
I miss the chronology.
That's what I was about to say. I remember when I was using Facebook, I liked to be able to go on there and just see who posted most recent from my friends. I don't care how beautiful or ugly they are. If you posted recently, that shows up at the top. I hated when they switched up to the algorithm. And that's when I stopped using it. But
yeah, the problem is then you get creators and whatnot to just, you know, find ways around the system. Imagine if the way you logged on to YouTube, everything was chronological. Kevin would be doing 64 videos a day rather than just 6 videos a day. No, because then you just show up first and it's like, everybody's going to watch my videos.
I think for YouTube, though, it was different because then only the videos that your subscribers would get all of your videos rather than just like a certain small percent of it. Yeah. That was like the old days of YouTube where it's like if you had 1 million subscribers, you were going to get 1 million views because you were shown to all of those subscribers. So I don't know. I miss those days too, but I totally understand the company's profit motive and just be like, well, why would we do that? Let's just get people to spend more time. I get it.
Yeah.
Where does it cross the line? I feel like for Facebook and like personally, and I know this is very subjective and different for everyone. I think when it crosses over into politics and like we have discourse about like who has the facts, like what's the truth, we don't trust each other anymore, and that just becomes so toxic in society, and I think Facebook played a huge role in that.
Yeah, well, we go through time periods like that. Like people forget about the old days of newspapers. Newspapers got completely out of control for a while. I don't know if this was back in the 20s or when I read about this, but you know, whoever wrote the craziest, most ridiculous headline would be the one that sells the most newspaper, right?
Sure.
Yeah, but like to Kevin's point, when you see a newspaper, you kind of understand the whole affiliate structure, sponsors. You're like, this is a play. This is a show. But social media is like real life, quote unquote. You think it's real life because everyone's showing you their most curated, perfect aspects of life. And so it's masked under this charade. Yeah, aspects. Exactly. Your assets. you get the idea. It's like social media is like.
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, it's us as a society still trying to figure out, you know, the good parts of this, the bad parts of this, and try to figure out how it fits into our lives. Like there's no doubt social media like fits into our lives, right? But we're trying to find that balance. And I think we've gone through time periods, you know, remember when alcohol used to be outlawed, you know, like you weren't allowed to drink alcohol in the United States and it was illegal, right? And then we found ways around that. And then we were like, well, you can't drunk drive and like, you know, well, this and that.
All I'll say is anyone watching or listening, watch something called The Social Dilemma. It's a great documentary on Netflix. It's basically, it just shows how powerful social media is and how it's like, it's a form of warfare at this point. Like we've gotten so efficient that these algorithms, like your brain can't keep up with this. Like we were never evolved to just deal with this stuff. It's become weaponized at this point. It's incredible. Definitely a Social Dilemma. Definitely check it out.
Not a shout out here to Roberto Blake. First of all, being a fellow YouTube creator. Also shout out for being a member for 6 months. Roberto Blake says, individual responsibility, period, hard stop. Give a consumer the choice, algorithm versus chronological. Can't childproof the world. Great show, you guys. I mean, I think that's great for adults, algo versus chronological. In fact, personally on Twitter, everyone I follow, I turn on notifications for them because I've kind of gamed Twitter to where I just keep the notifications tab open and I just see everything chronologically. If I go to the homepage, I just see the curated stuff and it bothers me. I want to see it all. And so I have it scrolling right here on my desk. I think that's great if you're over 18. I think the question then becomes, should a 13-year-old have to make that choice?
Yeah.
Or do their parents?
That's a good point. And then so it comes down to, like, do you want to age restrict stuff, right?
Right.
I think that's what it really comes down. Because at the end of the day, I don't know, man. I'm sure TikTok has the same type of people that are dancing that are super popular that maybe are given these body image issues. And I'm sure TikTok's the same way, right? And I can tell you YouTube, I've definitely seen a lot of those folks that are on those family channels. They look like they might have a little bit of work done. And man, do they get a lot of views, you know? So I don't know. I just feel like the whole everybody wants to cast it as just a Facebook problem, but I think it's an overall.
No, you're right. It is. It's much bigger than Facebook. It is much bigger than Facebook. It's so funny. Corey and I compared our TikToks and what she sees in her feed versus what I see. Hers is like all funny skits and memes, and mine's just not safe for work.
Because it's what you watch on. That's the thing.
I know.
TikTok just gives you whatever you stay on. So if you open it up, you're like, well, let me just finish this really quick.
Oh, and it's, for sure. Well, I'm going to stay on a girl in a bikini a lot longer than a picture of a dog. I'm just like, sweet, I want to watch this now. Guilty. Get me out of it. I don't want it anymore.
but you do.
No, I don't use TikTok. I don't use TikTok. I'd like to.
Andre, you need Elizabeth Warren to come teach you a lesson and delete that TikTok app.
This is true. Please tell me what to do, Queen.
She'll show you a good time.
Wait, but hold on. So how would you guys personally regulate this stuff? Like, where do you draw?
Sell the stock.
Shorted. Got it.
So let me get this right, Kevin. You want to sell the bullet makers, but not the gun maker, which the gun maker is Apple. they are. They make the gun. What's everybody using on the gun? The iPhone is the gun. Okay. The bullets are Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, the platform we're on that changed my life. I'm not going to say anything bad about it. And the other things, right? So is it the bullet or is it the gun?
What's really I don't know. Those are like one and the same, man. It's almost, to me, I think it's like Apple's the city and you're at the gun range talking about Facebook because it's on the floor and you're kind of having to like broom it around and stuff. Google, Amazon, Apple, all day long, throw Tesla in there. Facebook, I don't know. It's never been a thing for me. I personally, honestly, I can't say anything bad about the stock like fundamentally. I just don't like Facebook. Like, I just don't use it. It has nothing to do with this. I've said it like a million times on my channel. I just don't care about Facebook. I don't know. That's just me. What about you guys?
I like the groups. I'm a part of a reef aquarium group on Facebook. It's just, it's for some reason, like stuff like that for networking of just obscure subjects. Facebook is still like the best, I think.
That's how
their marketplace, you have to admit, their marketplace is pretty good.
I love their marketplace. It's really good. I've sold a couple things on there. So I will say I like using it for just to keep touch with my friends. But I'm just speaking purely about like regulating wise. Like, was Roberto Blake, was that the best approach? Just like give people a choice whether they want to be tracked or what they want to see. Is that the best approach? Just give people a choice. So I think that's a really great way of going about it.
Well, I mean, you're seeing that now with the Apple adpocalypse, where Apple is allowing people to agree or to opt out of their data being tracked to have customized ads delivered to them. And Facebook's kind of been freaking out a little bit about it. I mean, I'm sure Jeremy can speak to this more, but we've certainly gotten lower guidance and warnings that the Apple adpocalypse is having a larger impact than expected. It makes sense because the beautiful thing about Facebook used to be that as an advertiser, you could go in there and you could go, I specifically want women between 52 and 67 right before retirement, and I'm going to give them this certain catered political ad. And as soon as they get Social Security income, I'm going to give them Social Security related ads from 65 to say 80 or whatever, right? And so I wonder how many of the people sitting in Congress, you know, complaining about Facebook are going to stop using Facebook for their ads because of this stuff.
Yeah, you're having to spend a lot more now to get the same amount. That's what it comes down to on Facebook.
Does this
now
affect affiliates, you guys think?
Affiliates? What do you mean?
Yeah, like if somebody clicks on a link through your, let's say, YouTube channel, and does the website track and knows that it came off of a video or not?
Yeah, I don't think it's so much that. It was really an attack on for the most part, Facebook and that sort of data.
No, for sure. I'm just saying for Apple's privacy thing where it asks apps not to track, does it track your traffic so that if somebody clicks on your affiliate link, does it give you the credit or does it not know where that user came from and therefore you don't get that credit?
I don't think it touches that. I could be wrong, but yeah.
I don't know either.
Yeah, I don't think it touches that. But
yeah, because I think that's like IP cookieing. I think that's okay. I don't know with certainty, but I think really what they're trying to scrub is the fact that as an app creator, you used to be able to essentially know, oh, I've got this many people on my app who like Donald Trump on Facebook, you know, and then you could target to that group, like target everybody who likes Donald Trump. All right. Or target everybody who likes, you know, I don't know, Mothers Against Drunk Driving, whatever. Right. These specific causes.
Yep. British people be like, turn on your biscuits. Turn on your crumpets.
So, yeah, it might come down to age restriction on a lot of these things. Maybe over time there's some sort of age restriction on Facebook, Instagram, Discord. I wonder if anybody ever gets sad or mad on Discord.
I could totally see an age restriction, but the problem is that everyone lies about their age anyway. Everyone is going to say they're 18. So it's unless they require ID.
Say that. Because in congressional testimony today, the Francis, who testified, the whistleblower, she said that Facebook tells everyone that everyone lies about their age. But according to her research, only 10 to 15% of kids lie about their age.
Because they don't need to on Facebook. Here's the thing. Like on YouTube, let's say you want to watch the 18 plus videos, you're going to lie about your age. On Facebook, it doesn't matter if you're 15 or 19. You're going to get the same experience.
Well, it matters if you're under 13, because if you're 10, you're not allowed to use Facebook.
Well, then you say you're 11 or 12, whatever the minimum age is. I don't know. Right. But how many 10-year-olds are going on Facebook? I mean, I just don't know. But I would assume it's not much. I would assume if they have any sort of restriction in place, people are going to lie about their age. Mm.
Well, folks, do we have anything else to wrap up on? We talked about the debt ceiling. We talked about Biden. No, we didn't talk about Biden. I don't know if we want to do that. We talked about Facebook, crypto, stocks. I don't know. Do we want to touch briefly on we did talk about inflation. So that's roughly Biden, right? Anything else
we really want to talk about? You just got to mention the link down below in the description.
Yeah. If you guys want to find out the top five stocks that I picked, click the link down below and you'll find out. And again, it's like a little competition between all of us. So definitely check it out.
I'll be doing it, Andre, and then I could short all of those stocks.
We share at least one stock, so I hope you don't short it because that would be a bad idea.
Well, whatever stock that is, I'll keep that.
Okay.
Same. Right. I looked at that stock, and I'm like, yes. I actually just recently bought some of that. I'm like, yes.
let's not touch Biden because that sounds weird, and wrap it up.
All right, guys. So with that said, make sure to subscribe, hit the notification bell, use that link down below in the description. There's also the Millennial Money Clips channel. Make sure to subscribe to that. We post consistent videos on that. So if you want to get the best highlights and clips, the link to that is down below in the description. It's all free. So subscribing is free. Hitting the like button costs you nothing. So you may as well just quickly do that. Thank you guys so much. And until next time.
Super Saiyan.
This Mother's Day, show your love with the gift of warmth and comfort from Minky Couture. Wrap her in luxury with our ultra-soft, handcrafted blankets designed to bring joy and relaxation. From elegant floral patterns to vibrant colors, there's a Minky Couture blanket for every mom. Celebrate the extraordinary woman in your life with a gift she'll cherish forever. Shop now at MinkyCouture.com because every mom deserves to feel cherished.
The new Super Beats Heart Chews Advanced is now supercharged with CoQ10. Support your healthy CoQ10 levels and blood pressure with 2 chews a day. Visit RadioBeats, BEETS.com, and save 15% with promo code DEAL.